Okay, welcome to the Mountain Bike Podcast, brought to you by GMBN. Our guest today is none other than Brendan Fairclough.
Hello.
Oh my God.
Hello.
Oh, sorry, left you hanging there.
No, that's fine.
Not a great start.
No, that's
not
fine. We can get over it.
We can get over that.
We'll
move
pull
past
through.
It. Oh dear. Right, now, let me just paint a picture for you if you're just listening to this. We are in Fort William at the World Cup. Brendan, you're not racing, but we'll get to that in a moment. We're in our apartment where we stay every year, and we're in front of a line of books. Neil Donoghue's just off shot.
Yeah.
So we're going to keep on topic with downhill because he's our like professor when it comes to downhill racing. And we've got a couple of other people in the room as well.
The barman.
And you're forgetting the beautiful Fort William High Street. Is this down there?
You know what? It's
and
classic,
I can see kebab shop, vape shop,
yes,
kebab
yes.
shop.
Weatherspoons, I mean, is just right there. If you want to go and do it at Weatherspoons, we can just
actually, there's
on.
A nice, let's there's a nice cafe down there. We went to this morning.
We're going for a curry afterwards, aren't we?
We are.
We're going for curry, I think.
Went last night. I can't do two. There's a cafe down there. We went for breakfast this morning. We
yes.
said, well, the normal breakfast, I was going to get avocado on toast, obviously. Mm. I'm from Surrey, so you have to sort of have avocado and eggs for breakfast.
Yeah.
But it's avocado, because it's an extremely vegan joint, so there's obviously avocados are not good for
well,
the environment.
Well, it sounds like my place.
So no eggs, no avocados, no bacon.
What, so they're doing the whole avocados are not vegan?
Yeah, apparently because it's bad, you know, like bad, yeah. for, bad for the environment and blah, blah, blah.
How they grow them. See, I'm a vegan yeah. and I eat predominantly avocados.
There we go. You can't go there.
Oh, man.
You
that
can't go there.
Hey,
avocado on toast,
avocado,
it was said.
Avocado, that's unbelievable. Tell me about like your typical weekend at, I guess, Fort William World Cup when you are racing.
Yeah.
How would that usually go?
Do you know what, like, typical weekend? Well, this weekend is obviously extremely untypical. I came up here, I hurt myself, unfortunately, a few weeks ago on a film shoot.
Yeah.
Shooting a four-part series this year, but I won't go into that. We can go.
We're try and get a little bit out
yeah,
of you in a little while.
Advertise. Well, I can't advertise too much, but that's not what it's about. Anyway, up here, I was in real mixed emotions about whether I could ride or not. Mm. See my physio every other day, desperately just trying to find a way. And I can't even really do a proper push-up. I can't even like take my own body weight, and then. I thought, oh, I'd get really drugged up and I might have to go down there. And I walked the track on Thursday, track walk day. So I sort of approached the weekend like normal. I brought my mechanic up with me, bike's all prepped, bloody blah. And walked the track and I just saw the first sort of rock section. I just thought, you know what, you've been an idiot and you're not thinking of the long game. And so I pulled out, and it's hard to do as a race. Even though, you know, I'm not the sharp end anymore, which is the goal, but I'm not. And even when I'm not fighting for a championship or fighting for anything, I still want to be there and I still want to be in the mix. Mm. But I had to pull out and say, no, let's just focus on the end of the year and see what we can do. But
how does it feel like Fort William? I've been here, I was trying to think the other day, I don't know, at least 20 times.
Yeah.
How does it feel about coming here? And if you were, let's say you were racing,
yeah,
do you still look forward to it? The track... So one of those, do you like the track? Do you like the race more than the track?
I think you've just hit the nail directly on the head, because it's one of the biggest World Cups, you can't deny. It's like, I always look forward to any French World Cup because the crowd are amazing. They may not know who I am or who any riders are, but they'll shout louder than anyone, and they're there for the right reasons, and they're drinking, they're having wicked time, and they're flying around. You go to a World Cup in America and there's typically like five people there, and it's mostly like people's riders' parents. Yeah. So, but Fort William's unique because people, I think the English crowd just get behind riding, and they're all up here, they're all at the side of the tracks line. It's one of the best World Cups. So I think what you said, the track is definitely dated, and it feels, even though they've mixed up a little bit, it feels the same, and you're riding along like a rocky path down the hill. There's not really any mud left in it. It's not changeable. It's not anything. And it's funny, like, I was having like a little Instagram battle with Lewick, because he was up here last week riding,
which is not
illegal, which is allowed, apparently, which is blah, blah, blah. He put in his Instagram, guess what I'm testing, on his Instagram post. And I private messaged him saying, I don't know, guess you're testing the track, because... what else are you doing up here?
Yeah.
Like the week before. And I had a little discussion with him. You know, he's a great friend. And I really respect him. But I said, look, dude, back in the day, like, you wouldn't turn up at World Cup a week before. And there's also probably no advantage to turning up to World Cup the week before. You'd turn up and the track would change. So you can back me up, Donny. The track would change so much over the weekend.
Yeah.
That by being there a week before, it wouldn't really benefit.
No. But Fort, oh, it's funny.
But Fort in the whole time.
I rode 50 metres of it this week for a video we're doing. And I haven't raced it in 10 years. 2009 was the last time I rode it. And I jumped on the bike, riding an e-bike actually.
Yeah.
Bombed down the track. I was like, oh, this is like muscle memory of, you know, the start of the motorway, over the bridge. Yeah. You jump into it. I was like, I've done this 200 times. Yeah. And it feels exactly the same. It's 10 years later. I mean, I'm now on the other side of the tape, obviously, and I love watching it. It's my favourite race to come and watch.
Really? Okay,
but
yeah.
I'm glad I don't have to race it.
Yeah. No, and it is really weird sensation today. Like, I've never enjoyed it. I've never done really well. Mm. Previous years, I've gone to Maribor and got third at Maribor with a good run.
Mm.
Been on the podium, blah, blah, blah. Come here the next weekend and I've had a good run of what I felt was the same. I'm riding the same pace and I've got like 15th or something, you know? Mm. So it's always been not great for me. But like Don said, it's an amazing event.
It's strange, isn't it? We're like a track.
Definitely the track's not anything to write home about, I say.
But as a spectator, obviously, I've never raced Fort William, even though I seem to have won it in an imaginary video one time. But I've never actually raced the track in anger. But as a spectator, there's something to be said for corners you really know.
Yeah.
I mean, like, there's tracks in the F1 that, you know, the parabolic are certain turns that you, like, absolutely want to see the best people go around.
Yeah.
So that kind of standardization of a track is actually really interesting as a spectator, because you're like, well, how if this, you know, up-and-coming riders were like, how are they going to handle Fort William?
Then? Yeah.
Because, like, Brendan's been doing it for years. You know?
It's probably one of the only tracks, well, where you could have, like, a lap record, because it doesn't really change that much.
Yeah, exactly.
It does a bit,
but almost you can look back to years and see how much it's gone faster or slower.
Yeah.
Basically, what I'm saying, guys, is you're wrong. Anyway, moving on. Like, it's actually quite interesting. I wanted to bring this up, actually, that point you just said about how well you've done it for William. I've mentioned this to you before, but it's always stuck with me. I spoke to you after the Fort William race. It was probably in 2010, something like that. I spoke to you about, I don't know, an hour after the race is finished. The kind of podium's going on in the background. I was walking around the pits.
Yeah, they forgot my invitation to the podium.
Yeah, so you hadn't made, let's say you hadn't made the podium, right? And and I come over to you and I was like, dude, how was it? And I was kind of talking to what I thought is the young whippersnapper, pleased to be there, kid. Dude, you're at the World Cups.
Yeah.
You know, how was it? And you were like livid. And you went, I come 20th. And I was like, oh, nice one. To me, 20th in a World Cup is like, oh my God.
Yeah.
You know, I can't even imagine what qualifying at a World Cup must feel like. But 20th. And you said, and I think you reacted my response of positivity to that. And your answer was, mate, I'm not here to come 20th.
Yeah.
And that's always stuck with me. It's like, oh, that's what a racer is like.
Yeah.
They want to win. So what does it mean to you now when you know you're coming here? And like you said earlier on, you're not at the sharp end.
Yeah.
But don't get me wrong, I believe you could. I still think you've got it in you,
dude.
What does it feel like to kind of try and accept that, but still come and race? Does that take an edge off?
Do you know what? It's funny, because obviously when I started, like, I'm at a World Cup. This is amazing. Let's qualify. I think what it all comes down to is where you set your goals. Because if I set an unrealistic goal every weekend, I'm going to be disappointed every weekend. So I think in my career, like, my goal was when I first started World Cups, let's qualify. My first World Cup, I managed to qualify good. Did really well in my first... I did really well for the first 6 years of my World Cup career. I was like, floating around. You know, I had 12th in my first year, 12th, then 8th, then 6th, then 6th, and then I snapped my ACL and blah, blah, blah. And I think... But then your goals changed. Like, in those years, it was always, let's be in the top 10, let's be in the top 10, let's be in the top 10. And then when you're in the top 10, you're no longer happy with being in the top 10. You want to be in the top 5.
Yeah.
And then I'm gonna put Troy Brosnan on the line here. Like, he is the most phenomenal, consistent rider. Mm. But get my facts right, has he only won 2 World Cups? Maybe.
Oh, I can tell that for you.
But in my eyes, he's one of the most consistent, phenomenal downhill racers. He's in the podium all the time, but he's not happy with the podium. He wants to win, you know? And, like, for me now, like, I've gone up and I was no longer happy with top 10s. I wanted to be on the podium every weekend. And then, you know, I never got to that other step up, which is on the podium every weekend and wanted to win every weekend.
Yeah.
But now, like, I'm back again, but I'm still happy. But now I'm like, I want to be in the top 20. I want to be on live TV, and then I want to be top 10 for finals, you know? That's, like, where I'm at. So if you set your goal realistically, I think that's what you're always pushing for.
Yeah.
And I think you've got to be... I've always set goals, and it's whether it's for filming something or racing or something. And I think that's what keeps it fresh and keeps you... That's why I'm here, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's progression, isn't it? You've got to feel your progression.
Yeah, but I think it's also important to be realistic, which is sometimes hard.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so your racing career is quite interesting because, like, you have been through some of the biggest teams, and I don't know if anyone else has been on a team with probably another rider who could say they're the greatest rider ever. So you've been on a team with Sam Hill. You've been on a team with Greg Minnaar.
Yes.
And you could drop Steve Peat in there in terms of, like,
of course we can.
You know, I mean, I would always drop him in there. Yeah. But you know what I mean? So in your eyes, this is sort of like a two-part question. In your eyes, who is the best there's ever been? And where do you put yourself next to people like that? And can you? How do you?
No, not putting Greg Minnaar down. Yeah. I genuinely think he is the best consistent racer of all time.
Yes.
But in my eyes and in my era when I was up at the front and whatever, it's going to have to be Sam Hill for me.
Mm.
Because when he was winning, he was changing the game. He was like, started wearing race pants. Everyone started wearing race pants. Had wider bars. Everyone had wide bars on. It was like he changed the game a little bit, I think, more than anyone has.
Yeah.
And he was getting these winning margins. It was just like, wow.
Yeah. So who do you, was that Iron Horse?
Yeah. I signed for Honda and then I signed for Iron Horse for 1 year.
Yeah.
And then I was on Specialized with him for 4 years.
Yeah, right.
So.
I mean, that's strange. So did he like having you as a team?
Yeah, we got on super well.
And do you think he saw something in you as a teammate that was useful, or that he just liked hanging out?
I don't know whether he found me useful. Like, we used to practice all the time together.
Mm.
And often I felt faster than him in practice.
Really?
And often I'd be like, and he'd be like, you're going super well, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I'm feeling really good. Always put 5 seconds to me in the final without any shadow of a doubt.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, it was amazing. You know, obviously the big crash in Schladming, where I actually beat him in qualifying, and then
we were just watching that.
Yeah,
and you were up on him at the sprint.
Mm. I think Blinky qualified first. I qualified second, and I think Sam qualified third, maybe. But
yeah,
then also the first year I signed for Specialized, Sam qualified first in Maribor. I qualified second. It was our first like race together on Specialized, and we were just. I remember sitting at the top with him. We were both looking at each other. No one else there at the top. Yeah.
That's such a weird feeling. So I've never really done it, except for world champs. I was sixth man down. I never felt it before. Yeah. I felt really lonely and I didn't know how to deal with it.
Now, that's a really interesting point, because that's something, because as a spectator of downhill racing, I've been able to come to events and I've had slightly sort of, what should I say? I don't want to call myself it, but I've had VIP access to those moments. Talk us about that moment when you're at the top of a downhill and it all goes quiet. Everyone's gone. They've all gone down the hill.
Yeah.
And you're the fastest people. And suddenly the silence erupts. There's sort of like this silence. And I've been up there and I've watched it when Petey's about to go down Fort William and he's potentially going to win this.
Oh, wow, that's the best of Petey at the top.
And suddenly there's this silence, but the pressure is... like palpable. You can literally feel it.
What's I'm not an expert on it.
But you've been there.
I've been there. I've probably qualified top five like 15 times in my career, you know, and but only backed it up with 8 World Cup podiums. But I've been at the top, and it's crazy because generally everyone goes and walks the track. Mm. They walk down, they watch everyone walk down, and they all end up at the bottom waiting for the top 5 guys. And it's like, and no one's like,
and no one's with
you. The top 2/3 of the track, you don't see anyone.
No, you don't see anyone. And like, and it was just JC, who was our mechanic at the time. JC was spanning on me and Sam's bike, so JC sat in the middle of us, me and Sam either side, looking over Maribor. Yeah. Just like, he was like,
suddenly,
how you doing, mate? And I was like, yeah, I'm a bit nervous. You? And he's like, yep. And the thing with Sam is like, he'd get so nervous, he'd like be sick. Like a few times, like Val de Sol, he was sick in the bushes and then went straight onto his run.
What,
and
they did the
most crazy
one?
No, the most correct, the Sam's World Champion.
Yeah. And crash and finish.
Yeah, and like,
insane.
And I've got to quickly tell you this funny story about that exact race I'm just talking about, referencing Maribor.
And what year would that be?
It was going to be way back in the day. I think it was 2010.
Right. Yeah.
That's not way back in the day.
Well, yeah.
It goes further
back. 8-9 years
You're actually young.
And we were in the truck. We qualified first and second, blah, blah, blah. We're in the truck. And typically our team manager at the time, Sean, would wake us up and would just bring us around and have lunch. And then we'd go up for a run.
Times a little bit like you're sleeping in the same bed.
Come on, guys, wake up. No, Sam would have the bed and I'd be on the floor or something, or like on the dog bed or something. And for some reason, we got woken up a bit late, or Sean wasn't there, whatever. And we're like, geez, our run is in like an hour and we haven't eaten, we haven't done anything. So we're rushing around the bottom of Maribor, sprinted into the restaurant. We're like, we need food. What's quickest? And they're like, oh, we can get you spaghetti bolognese. So yeah, spaghetti bolognese, got it out. Steaming the spaghetti bolognese down our throats, and then blah blah blah, go up on the lift on the bikes and on the trainers at the top, and I'm on the trainer, bit of a spaghetti bolognese, and okay, don't worry about it, get on my run. Halfway down my run, this is another time where Sam Hill managed to crash into the woods off the fire road after the rock garden.
Yeah.
Peel his bike back out of the woods, get back on it, ride down, still get 5th. So, I mean, I got 3rd that weekend, but I think I got 4th.
Yeah.
But halfway down my run, I think I was out the rock, I can't exactly remember, but I remember puking up in my helmet spaghetti bolognese. So I've gone down, I've got to get rid of that out of my mouth. It's just gone straight into my helmet.
Oh.
And just carried on like nothing. I got to the bottom, I remember speaking to my manager at the time, Sean. I was like, dude, don't come near me. I've got puke in my helmet.
Glamour.
Yeah.
The glamour of World Cup racing.
That's another Sam Hill story, like crashed into the bushes and got his bike back out and still on the top 5. So
I'm not the aficionado on, but what is the track that I was watching the other day where it's incredibly wet and he still comes?
Champry,
yeah.
How's that possible? How is there that there's a rider that can do something that all the other riders just are literally at the bottom of the hill shaking their heads at?
No,
you've been that close to his racing.
No, I could have done that. No, I'm joking. Because he's good at biking. Downhill, really fast.
Have you seen that clip of him recently? It's an advert for their new bike. What is that bike
now? Yeah, the new Nukeproof downhill bike. There's Sam riding that new bike
it's
in Perth.
Phenomenal.
First time I've seen him ride downhill bike in a while.
The guy looks like he's accelerating in the berms with the
I think the guys who can go around corners the best, Josh Bryson.
Yeah.
And Sam Hill.
We're going to come to Josh Bryson in a minute. I want to get your thoughts on that.
Right.
But I want to get to, this is a really important question for me because...
Have a quick sip of my beverage.
Yes.
Big monster.
Just look at me while this is happening. Look at me. We're going to come to Monster as well. I'm going to note that. Bryson, Monster. We're coming to both of those. Why haven't you won a World Cup? You've got no excuses.
No, I've had zero excuses. Right
talent,
now,
teammates, bikes,
exquisite fitness and figure and muscular ability.
Okay,
I don't know. I'm missing that one little mineral. I think, you know,
it's not easy. Come on,
no,
it's the hardest thing ever. Trying to win a World Cup.
Yeah, I've been extremely close. If I knew.
Because the reason I ask it, because I've said this to you before, because of your other talents, which also we're going to get to, yeah. Other talents, Briceland Monster.
Yeah, we've got a few. Right. This could be five hour poddy.
Yeah, it's going to go on. In my view, you're a World Cup away from being the best bike rider on the planet.
Yeah, I think that's...
You can do everything.
Yeah.
You can clearly, if the moment was right, the track worked for you, you could...
The stars aligned. The stars
exactly,
aligned.
It's got to happen that way, isn't it? If the stars aligned, you've got what it takes to win a World Cup. So why is it there's someone who can win 20 World Cups who hasn't got much more than you?
I think there's a saying, isn't there? Master none. What is it?
Jack of all trades.
Jack of all trades, master of none.
Well, I think that's playing you down an awful lot. Certainly not where I wanted to get with that question. But
that's what you're trying to get.
But maybe we have to leave it on that bit. Right, so talking about your other talents, because...
Hang on, wait, sorry, one second. Sam Hill has won Enduro World Series. Could you do that?
Oh, hang on a minute. I just listed five things I want to get to, and now you bring up, is he going to ride EWF?
Do you know what? I've been asked.
I've lost control, guys.
I've thought about it because of this fact. The fact that now you're only allowed to have one practice run.
Yeah.
Of the track.
Yeah, it depends where you are, I think. But yeah. You basically, it's virtually blind racing.
It's pretty much blind racing, and I feel like my style, and I feel like that comes down to a lot of bike skill, and it takes an element of, it uses a lot more elements of pure riding skill.
It's like you've got to improvise.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly that.
So I thought of it, but I'm in danger of, like, I've got some other really cool stuff going on, and I feel like I want to push in another direction. I really, my focus is downhill for sure. I'm really not quite finished with that. I'm desperate to get back in the top 10. I'm desperate to... I've had 8 World Cup podiums. I'd love 10.
Yes.
To tell you the truth. And I don't... And I'm still pushing. And now I've got the best... I think one of the best bikes I've had now for the last at least 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
So I'm really pushing for that. But...
Because you really think that bike stepped forward.
Yeah, I do, yeah. It's super light, carries speed... It works well for me.
Is it a 29er? Excuse my ignorance.
It is. It comes as both. You know, like any Scott will come, like it comes as a 29. It flip chip, and you can put it 27. But
and how would you run it?
I rode it mixer.
Oh, nice. I rode it mixer. What do they call it? A mullet?
No, it's not a mullet. It's a reverse mullet.
No, it's reverse mullet. It is. Yeah.
But purely because
we should call it a Phil Atwill.
Yeah. I was desperate to run 29s, and I. Committed to, I'd never run them before, committed to it in New Zealand, rode it for 2 weeks, just kept catching my ass the whole time, and I didn't feel comfortable. So then I saw Luke doing it, another guy that I look up to, and I think you know, great guy, and obviously he can ride bikes down hills pretty well as well.
He's not bad.
So I said try it, and I think it worked well for me. But for here I was definitely going to go 29-29. For Leogang I'll probably go 29-29, but for sure Val d'Isol, Andorra, these tracks where you have to get off the back, especially as I'm flat pedals, so like I'm quite often even more so. It worked for me.
Nice
fling around corners like Josh Bryson on the back there, so it's good.
We're coming to him. Good friend of yours. That change in your career, like you say, you're still focused on downhill, but there's definitely now there's a movement happening in the sport that's quite subtle, but it's definitely there now because of people like yourself and Josh that are moving away from racing and proving that there's something beyond your results that comes into the making films, the art side of riding, getting across an inspirational feeling. Like, in my opinion, incredibly important things that really make people decide... to ride bikes.
Yeah.
So big things, like how do you see that playing out? How have you got to where you are now, where you're on the very sort of pinnacle of that kind of movement?
Yeah. Because I can't win World Cups. No. I've always vainly loved making films.
Yeah.
I've loved the final product. I've always been very proud of the final product. It's always no one likes filming. You have to push up the hill 100 times. Mm. You have to, you know, filming's not rock and roll.
It's the lengthy process that hopefully you'll get some cool shots out of. It's not guaranteed.
It's not guaranteed. You have to work hard to do it. You have to push up. You have to rely often on someone else to create the end product in a way that you envision. Because, like, we can ride, but we can't edit.
And they're not always very good.
That was harsh.
I've been...
Poor old Jack.
I've been very fortunate to work with some of the best filmmakers in the world, which maybe is like help the end product being cool that I want to watch it. And I find the end product cool as in, for me when I was a kid, watching like Sprung and Earth videos, so that got me out on my bike, that got me out in the woods. And that's what I wanted to do, to get other people out on the bikes and out in the woods. And that's kind of the reason why I did it, because... Not because I wanted to go back and watch myself ride downhill. It's because I wanted to, and I've had so many cool comments like that. And it's like when people say, "Oh, cheers, dude! My 12-year-old kid like just comes back from school, watches Death Grip every single day, and then gets out on his bike." And I'm just like, even if three people do that,
yeah, exactly,
it's like job done.
Yeah, it's a very strange.
And that is so cool for
me. It's a very strange experience to hear someone say that.
Yeah.
That bit of riding you did made me do something. And you think, oh my God, you've got to think
about
it.
Yeah, how cool is
that? Yeah, it's crazy.
And I really enjoyed that. And also, I'm not blinkered in knowing that why I get paid to ride a bike. Why I get paid to ride a bike is to influence people in the right way. Is to ultimately try to sell product, sell bike bits, sell frames, sell wheels, sell tyres, sell handlebars, sell grips, Death Grips.
Monster.
Yeah.
Amazing.
No, but I think the World Cup circuit is amazing, Formula One of it, but it's such a small part of it overall.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, a World Cup result has quite a small shelf life, quite a short shelf life.
Yeah.
Like, I hate to say it, but a World Cup result lasts till the next World Cup result.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like any race, isn't it? You're only as good as your last result.
And then Donnie, all of us here, we're huge World Cup enthusiasts and fans, but if I said who got third at the last World Cup or the last World Cup last year, it's hard. It's not there, you know?
So do you want to win the last World Cup of the year, really? That's the longest.
Or what you have to do is go out flaming, you know, like win a World Cup with no chain, or have the biggest crash at a World Cup.
Yeah, you need the moments.
Or have the most amount of punches at a World Cup or something. You need the moments. Yeah. But that's why I go back to saying, like, am I doing edit? It's got a bit longer shelf life, and it can influence hopefully more people to get out on their bikes. So that's kind of why I do it.
Since I'm looking forward to the stuff you've sort of mentioned off camera you've got coming this year. It sounds very exciting.
Yeah.
Unless you want to get into that in a bit, I won't push on it.
No,
but,
we can.
The stuff that, so let's talk about you and Josh. Obviously, you're great friends going years back.
Yeah.
You were young riders coming through the UK scene, mentored by Steve Pete, along with Neil, of course.
Yeah.
Very much like the new generation.
Wow, all the best.
I would say the best.
The original. But I was lucky. I started in 99 when Petey started Royal, and he decided he was going to do it with juniors. But yeah, there's been a lot of
Rich Barlow?
It was me and Rich Barlow. Stu Thompson, who makes videos with Danny Mack now. And then you must come around just after that.
No, Beaumont.
Oh, Mark Beaumont, of course. Mm. World Cup winner.
Yeah.
Yourself, Josh.
Yeah.
Some big names.
Wow, just to put it all in perspective, guys, that means that through Brendan Fairclough, Neil Donoghue, Josh Briceland, who was the other rider?
Mark Beaumont,
right? You still can't equal his race wins.
No.
Shit.
On his own. Sorry, lads. Didn't want to bring you down there, but I had to.
Wow, let's
just some numbers. Just some numbers.
Josh,
the guy's got race wins to spare.
Yeah, how many did Josh win?
Four.
I don't know, actually.
Four or five.
Yeah.
He's that four wins extra.
I'm determined to talk about Josh Briceland and you because it intrigues me, right? Because I think you two guys are so important in the sport right now, and I don't want to put unrealized pressure on you or something, but I really love watching racers who inspire others, and what you're saying about your filming is so true, that you can really change what someone's going to do after school on any particular day. That's remarkable. But
I can't. You've got to do your homework and then go ride your bike.
Screw that, dude.
Look, yeah.
You just told me you bought an XC90.
Yeah, screw your homework.
Yeah, screw homework. Get out of your bike. It's working.
Go dig jumps.
We're back to the good times. We're rolling. So what do you feel like you're doing something? Obviously, you're doing very different things to you
to
and
Josh.
But do you feel that movement yourself? Like that there's... That you're showing people that there's a lot, almost there's a lot more to it than race wins.
Yeah, but you know, I think I'm a bit different in Josh. Like Josh has been there, he's done it. Mm. He doesn't strive to race anymore. He's decided. I think he's just like, I didn't like the pressure of it. I didn't like the training part of it. Mm. I did it. I trained just to race or whatever.
Yeah.
Had what a couple of amazing seasons. We're winning World Cups. Should have been World Champ. World Cup overall should have been World Champ. Unfortunately,
yeah. He sort of default was World Champ.
Yeah, I think he pretty much is. Sorry, G, but yeah.
We all probably celebrate that moment more than we do the race result.
Yeah.
I've watched it a few times.
Yeah.
Who won it? G won it.
G, yeah. But
I've taken everything away from G. It was, you know, still got to get down the track in one
place. Yeah,
place.
And didn't Sam Hill also like have one of the fastest splits and crashing those rocks?
I don't know, can't remember.
Yeah.
But anyway, so we Josh.
Josh is unique though. You can't compare Josh to anyone.
Well, I don't want to compare you to Josh in that sense. I mean, you're very different, but it's interesting, you know, like you say, he's moved out of it in the knowledge that he's like, well, I know what I didn't like about it. You obviously still love the racing.
Yeah, which weird. Kind of people often say place. That to me. Often people say, are you just going to go free ride? Are you just going to go free? And I'm like, no, like me racing, like gets me to the gym, like makes me not lazy, makes me wake up in the morning, makes me going to go train and progress and whatever. Mm. Gives me drive, I think.
Yeah,
whereas if this was like, no, I'm not racing anymore. Not that I'd be lazy, that's not in my nature, but I feel like, oh shit, what am I like?
Yeah, but the movie clip, it feels like the movie clips.
Yeah, I feel like if I didn't race, I could put a lot more energy into the filming side of things, which I think would be also cool.
So what can you tell us about what you are doing this year?
We're doing a four-part series. It's called...
Sounds so good.
Yeah, it's a four-part series. It's called A Dog's Life.
Brilliant.
Four-part series called A Dog's Life. We're filming four banging 3 to 4 minute edits.
Nice.
For the internet viewers to get excited about, which you have to do these days. It's going to be the extreme, the final product, the jumps, the flips, the crashes or whatever, you know, an edit.
Yeah.
A standard mountain bike edit.
Yeah.
Along to back that up, we're doing four 24-minute longer pieces to sort of, I'm not going to say educate people, that sounds patronising, but to show people what goes behind filming.
Yeah.
And what goes behind to get that 3-minute product. It's me scouting an area, me heading out there and digging often with a friend of mine, getting machines there. You know, just, for example, getting out there, logistics of getting machines to where we need to build, getting someone to come and build with me, final product, we've got to build what we need to build, go out there again and film it. Often the weather's not good, often what you've built is not as good as when you came back to it. It might be too dry or too wet or whatever.
Yeah.
You could crash, you could hurt yourself, you've got to deal with all these crazy different things. It's not, and I'm super guilty for it as well. Mm. I watch an edit online and I'll just turn it off and I think, oh, that's really super cool. But I think, geez, like they just filmed in some crazy remote part of the world and that wasn't just there. So what I wanted to do, I'm not going to say educate again, I'm going to say just, I wanted to show people what goes in behind it.
Yeah.
So I guess it's going to be like a sort of like, you know, Ice Road Truckers or Gold Rush, your type style vloggy piece.
And that you've done the first one in Madeira. How many times have you been to Madeira?
I must have been like 12... 13 times.
Well, I went first time last year. I couldn't believe how good the ride
really
was.
Really cool, huh?
Yeah.
Such a variety of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
That's definitely somewhere I'd like to go.
Yeah.
The weather's pretty changeable, though. It rained a lot when I was there. I know it's either red or...
There's like little microclimates. So,
yeah.
Am I right, when you fly into Madeira, you kind of fly in alongside a cliff?
Yeah, it's like... Right? second most dangerous airport in the world.
Yeah. Apparently, yeah, a lot of people get sent somewhere else to that other island that quite often they can't land on there. Yeah. You end up landing somewhere else and waiting.
I've done that a few times.
Oof. Yes. I'm going to go there.
But yeah, like weather, for example, when we filmed Death Grip, we had to go back three times to film it. Like that cliff, the cliff jump section, it was too windy, or it was rainy or foggy or blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, because you've built a line that's so, like, it's got so many parameters that have to be right. Yeah. Suddenly one out and it's like, it's not what you imagined. Yeah.
Another time we went there, Sam Wren cased one of the jumps and bent his forks, shoot over.
Yeah.
And I'm often like at the sharp end of the shoot, so I'm controlling the budgets, and I'm paying for the hotels, I'm paying for flights, I'm paying for baggage, I'm paying for everything. Mm. Not me, it's obviously supported by my sponsors, but I'm dealing with the budget.
Yeah.
So if now we can't film, then like I'm thinking, oh my God, we're going to have to fly everyone back out here. We get hotels again, we've got to like, when can everyone's schedules line up again? I've got to do World Cups, I've got to train. So that's what I wanted to show in this Madeira section, and hopefully we're going to do Madeira. Did another one in the UK, which was a failed section of Death Grip called Berm to Berm.
Yeah.
And we're going to do hopefully another one in Kenya.
Yeah.
And another one in Patagonia.
Yeah, and I believe in Berm to Berm, you're going to use a very unique device called the Random Tandem to help you film part of that. And try to get you on camera.
I'd be glad to get you in.
I think I'm going to help do one of the camera shots.
The dollies.
That's essentially what I will be. A dolly.
And then we'll probably have a cable cam as well, so we can tell you. But it's electric, isn't it? So you can just shape it.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. I'm going to get you on that bike.
We'll be on it.
That actually made me think. So you may be pulled away from racing to do this movie career, essentially.
Yeah.
That might happen. I actually hope it does.
It will happen.
Yeah. But what you just said is that how you're running the budgets of these things.
Yeah.
Will we ever see Brendan Fairclough, the team manager at races? Because that's another way for you to win a World Cup.
Yeah.
It ain't over till it's over, son, you know?
I'll be honest, I'm not super enthused or motivated to be a team manager of a World Cup team.
It's a lot of money in team management.
I think there probably is, but I'm not driven by money. So I'm driven by getting people on bikes.
I bring up the XC90 one time. It's an interesting question, actually. Where's the money at in mountain biking? You've kind of covered all the facets of it.
Yeah.
Like, there was a period in the 1990s when I was riding professionally, kind of at, like, I guess, my best for whatever I was doing. But there was a time when there was people earning a lot of money. Like, you're talking like £500,000 contracts, which at the time was ridiculous. Then we went through a spell where people were racing for the pure love of it because they weren't making a lot of money. But now I don't want to get like into your personal details. But what I'd like to know is, in your opinion, from some experience, where's the money at in racing? Because as a spectator, you do look at people and go, God, I bet these guys are millionaires.
I would tell you right now that I'd say maybe Greg might be from over years and years and years, but no one's making $1 million a year in down and mountain biking. But definitely this year for me is, you know, probably my best year because a lot of things have come together. Got Signature Parts, which is a great opportunity. I'd love to bring back the story of Michael Jordan back in the day when Nike offered him, I'm gonna guess numbers here, but I think they offered him like $4 million or whatever, and they said, and you can have a signature shoe. And he's, I'm literally plucking numbers out of the air, but like the story that I like to tell, I like to think true, is like, no, I'll take $2 million, but I want royalties on a signature on the shoe.
Genius move in history.
And nowadays, the Jordan
doesn't happen much. I remember Petey getting signature like 661 body armor and getting a payout from every single one.
Yeah,
like royalties every single one they sell.
Yeah,
it's a great way of doing it.
But that's definitely
a couple of houses on it.
That's royalties is great. It's been great for Death Grips and for the handlebars and whatever. Nowadays I'm not actually in a team anymore. I'm sort of a free rider, so I ride for Scott, And part of my Scott deal is it comes with Fox, which is I'm very grateful for.
Yeah.
But all my other sponsors I've drawn together by myself, and I was in a very fortunate position to go out there and say who do I want to represent, who do I feel is the best products in the mountain bike industry. And I approached them, and that's a good way to bring some other people together.
Yeah.
Do you have help doing that though? It's a lot of work in the office.
Yeah, it makes it a lot of work. I actually don't. I used to have help from Martin Whiteley way back in the day, like in 2007, but not anymore. But for me, I think the mountain bike industry is so small. I value that personal relationship with someone.
Yeah. Yeah.
And often if I speak to you, Don, and you're, I don't know, a tyre sponsor, and we've got all a personal relationship, we go and have a couple of beers down the pub, and then I go, okay, I need X amount of money to you, but then it's come through a third party, and everyone feels a bit like hard done by, I think. And you know, you want to help the athlete out, you don't want to give some other guy 20% for writing an email.
Oh, it's funny, I had that this very same conversation with someone who's the team manager for a very big manufacturer, and they said the same thing. Is that ex rider would be earning way more money if they didn't have an agent. Because not because the agent's taking the cut, basically they don't want to deal with the agent and they just pay
so not as much. To go back to you, I love that personal relationship. I love talking to people or whatever. And I'm in a position now where people trust me. Mm. Like I can go to sponsors and say, can I have X amount of money? I'm going to do this project. And they'll give me the money and I manage it. And
because you've delivered in the past and they can see it. I mean, that's something that's really nice about your setup this year, is that as a fan of the sport, if I'm looking at like, well, what are the top guys using? You're using the stuff you really want to use.
Yeah, I'm very fortunate. And I just, I went out and I said, I want Envy, I want Max, I want Chris King, I want DMR, I want this relationship. And that's all because of relationships, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think definitely the money in the sport is going up. And I think I think to value yourself is extremely hard. Because how can someone go, and it's really hard for everyone. And if you say, I think how you've got to value yourself is how many people look up to you, how many people follow you. I hate that word again, but how many people follow you, and that's like how many people you directly influence. Because
I come to that word again, actually.
Because it's like we'll bring Instagram into it, but if you have 100,000 followers, like I don't need to follow you. Like if I'm not interested in what you do, I don't need to follow Danny Mac, if I'm not interested in him, I can easily just press unfollow.
I did Danny Mac the other day.
Whereas if I'm interested in someone and that means that you're influential to them, that means you can like bring that. But then I also hate like direct selling stuff on Instagram and stuff like that, which I really try to avoid. But I think that's a good way to give you an evaluation.
But you're faced with that problem, is you are an influencer. That's what I wanted to get. I wanted to say influencer to you because I can tell it's like, it's not a really comfortable thing to think.
Well, content creator, influencer.
It's influencer because it's very
you
now.
You guys are content creators.
He's a vlogger at that moment.
Yeah, vlogger.
Actually, that guy there is supposed to be our barman, but he's not doing a very good job. No.
What would you like to drink?
To answer your question, I think these days, like Instagram stuff does make it easier to value riders. Like,
100%.
And I think people, I'm going to get into the money side of it because I think it's interesting. I think I see some riders that you can have a very fortunate year when no other riders are up for grabs and teams have to get riders, and you hear these crazy deals that I think as for me, like if I'm an investor, I want three times my investment. I think if you invest that money into some of the riders, they're not going to give you three times your investment.
No, 100%
not. But you need the rider, like to go to your sponsors to get the money. You say, "Oh look, we've got a podium potential rider." But equally, other people, I feel like I've got bad deals, and I think like, well, you actually influence a lot of people. You probably sell a lot of bikes, and you're maybe not getting what you're worth. But only now have I had enough guts or whatever to go and ask for what I feel like I'm worth.
Yeah.
But you can equally back it up. You can go, look, this is that. That's what we...
It's a very strange situation because it's the stars aligning that decides your value.
Yeah.
Because there have been seasons where at the end of the year people have got either more or much less than their worth.
And I think
thanks, Bingball. No ice.
I also haven't had expensive taster in the past and have taken after Steve Pete and bought a few little properties here and there. And
a few? Anyway, let's not get into that. What is your most extravagant? Like from your racing millions and millions, please God, I hope that's the truth. Yeah. What's your most extravagant purchase? You know, I mean, everyone wants to know what their favourite superstar's buying.
Probably my girlfriend.
It cost an awful lot of money. You dug that hole all by yourself, and I can't really get out of it.
I've got to say, fiance.
Fiance,
congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations.
That's a nice handshake. I should have left you hanging there, shouldn't I?
You should have done.
The RS4 can't have been a great investment, surely.
You say that, Don.
Really?
I bought the RS4 for 8 years ago for £18,500. It had done 80,000 miles. So it wasn't in great, it wasn't the best one on there. Now it's worth 14 grand and it's eight years old and has done an extra 50,000 miles.
Not bad.
So eat your words.
Trust Neil to get it to cars.
Yeah.
From the man with the poor man's RS4.
Oh, he hasn't got an RS. Oh, he's bitter. Did they forget the R off of yours, Don?
No, it's got the R. It hasn't got the S4. Oh.
I'm going to come back to a question now. This is taking us back to racing a little bit because we've been talking about the more modern movement in mountain biking, but you've been riding long enough, and I don't want to make you feel old, to remember the kind of the original French Revolution where there was French riders just winning left, right and centre. They seemed like they could do no wrong, but they were doing it in a certain way, very serious chaps.
Yeah, yeah.
These days, we've got this threesome. Got
like
Loic Loris and
Pyrion
and...
There are more.
Annoyingly, they've got more to spare. But those three kind of like they're the men of the movement. And they're very cool.
How refreshing is this new French Revolution?
Isn't it just? How is that working? Because it's so different.
I think what's happened is they've gone and looked back at previous French races and gone, geez, no one likes these guys.
Yeah, they're winning, but no one wants them to.
Winning, but who cares? Yeah. So the new French Revolution are, like you've mentioned, but it goes deeper than that. It goes to, I hate not being able to remember names, the other common cell rider, super loose.
Rémy Thirion
also.
Yeah.
Frixton.
Skinnier guy, Frixton as well, super cool style. Another common cell guy, he's Pyrion's best friend. Sorry, dude.
People in the comments.
Sorry,
though.
Dude.
People in the comments.
Great there, rider.
Yeah.
We'll love watching him come down.
Yeah, yeah.
All these guys, and they're such rad dudes.
Yeah.
They're such rad dudes. I think they've gone, shit, we're super uncool back then. Let's pick this up.
But is that kind of change of that change of approach? Is that why they're doing well, or is it the same? They're doing the same thing, but now they're presenting it in a nicer way.
There's no rhyme or reason, dude. Look, let's just go back in the past. It's like it's gone typically from the Aussies to the Brits to the French to the Aussies, Brits, French. You know, we go around in this. While the nation's probably not really as dominant as those, and it goes round in these circles, and French are having their couple of years.
Yeah, because I mean they're fabulous to watch.
Yeah.
I never thought I'd want to see a Frenchman win World Cup downhills, but I want to see Loris Vergier win. I want to see Loic. I mean, I love Loic Bruni. Yeah. I think
Pyrion,
Super Bruni.
Pyrion, what a great addition to their French family, like. How funny is he?
I mean, look, his year last year was a joy to watch. It looked like he giggled his whole way through the year. Yeah. Like, this is easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, incredible. So, I really like where we're at with that. But why haven't the US ever had a moment like that? So the Aussies have had it. The Brits have definitely had it. There was Brit pop mountain biking, and there's definitely French pop mountain biking now.
Yeah.
US pop mountain biking, not happening. Why is that? We've got Gwyn.
I think maybe they might take themselves a little too seriously at the minute.
Oh, I like where we're going with this. Come on.
Charlie Harrison, was he third at the first round?
Yeah, we have. Who's the other really great? Dakota Norton?
Yeah, he's doing
very well. He had a really great result at one of their Grit Series races recently. Big gap, beat Nico Mullally like by 3 seconds or something like that, which in downhill is quite a big chunk.
Yeah, definitely. So
is he someone we're going to see emerge to like sort of take wins? What's your thoughts on a rider like that? Well, you're not really watching the races, the other ones. You're thinking about yourself.
Just myself, that's all I think about, yeah. Who's that bloke again?
Brilliant.
No,
He's going to listen to this and be hurt.
No. Obviously, he's incredible. You've got your eye on all of these guys.
Yeah. But, I guess there's only so much you can think about when you're trying to actually do it.
Yeah, and there's like 30 guys out there that are potential podium guys these days.
Yeah.
Including myself.
Yeah.
I'm a potential podium
100%
guy.
100%.
But there really is. Like, it's no longer like the top five is no longer easy to predict. It's just really not. It's like you can put 10 guys around there, but there's 20 guys that could be on the podium.
Yeah, which is so incredible.
Really cool. Which it's makes incredible. The sport really
it makes
cool.
Me
the
very
sport's
excited.
Definitely changed a lot since we were flying down and doing stuff. But yeah, I think it's not changed in a bad way necessarily.
Mm. Can we talk about women?
Sure.
The women's scene. I spoke to Tani Seagrave.
She just not injure herself.
She hurt herself today.
Shame.
Get well soon, Tani. Does actually really suck.
Yeah.
I spoke to her, I think it was last year, maybe the year before, and she was saying about, like, you know, because the women's race scene is very different to the men's. It's, you know, a much smaller...
I thought you were going to say another S word.
It's a much smaller pot of talent in terms of, like, people who could actually win.
Yeah.
You got 20 girls, but really... There's five who could essentially win. And Tanya was effectively saying, look, why don't we just make the race the five that can win?
Really, yeah.
Which makes me wonder how we would then redistribute that power. But what do you think about what could the women's scene do that would make it more interesting to you? Or is it incredibly interesting to you? Or have you just not got time?
Pass. I don't think I'm qualified for this question.
And why is that? That leads me to the question of why.
I personally think that they should probably even make the men's field smaller.
Oh, really? Oh, that's
because it's not for me. Mm. It's ultimately for TV. It's for the. It's not. We don't have the Formula One of mountain biking, and every Tom, Dick and Harry can just come and have a go and ride down the hill. Mm. That doesn't happen in Formula One. That doesn't happen in World Rally. That doesn't happen in World Motocross. That doesn't happen in NASCAR. Mm. And we have a sport where we have 120 guys that have a pop at the title.
Yeah,
it's like, come and ride down there, like, see how well you can do.
Yeah.
And not bringing female into it. I'm going to be very PC, which I am, and I love the fact that the women's sport is growing hugely, which is so cool. But let's make a downhill track that only 30 guys can get down.
Yeah,
that's going to be hugely good. That's going to be amazing for TV.
Yeah,
that's going to be amazing for spectators. That's going to be amazing for everyone involved. And you know, if there's top 30 in the 30 riders in the world, I wouldn't actually be in that top 30. So that's not me being...
Yeah, right.
That's not me being, you know... I just think we're in a weird sport where we're like, come on, everyone have a go. Sure, have a go at mountain biking, but go ride a local race, go ride a regional race, go ride a national race.
Yeah.
But I feel like the World Cup is a Formula One. Like, there should be 30 guys puzzling on whether they get over this 90-foot jump or whether they can get through that rock garden.
Yeah, no, you're right.
They should take a leaf out of the FMB World Tour Diamond Series.
gold series, silver series.
Yeah.
Certain people can only do it.
Yeah. I feel like, and honestly, this is not because I wouldn't actually be in there right now.
Mm.
But I feel like to progress the sport, like we're in a weird sport where everyone just comes and has a go.
Mm.
Like, I think there's going to be people that are butthurt about it, but to push the sport to the next level, let's make it crazy.
Got the butthurt.
Yeah.
Never heard that phrase.
Well, I'm going to be butthurt.
But you're actually
watching on the sidelines.
You're actually kind of agreeing with Tani.
But
yeah,
to bring this back to Tani, it's like, without saying that they should have their own race on a different weekend on their own track, but what other sport do the men and women ride down the same track or whatever, you know? And yeah, for sure. Like, I feel like that's like where the men's sport could go.
Yeah. I mean, Tani was essentially saying the same thing as you. Obviously, the filtering the field.
Yeah.
So you've got the absolute best race out of the best riders.
Yeah.
Was what she wanted to see. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, there's a lot less women who can do it. So you're saying, like, bring the 120 down to 30, and she's saying bring the 20 down to 5.
Yeah, and get the 5 chicks and the 30 dudes on the same track. But, you know, it's like, I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I'm not qualified for this, but I just feel like the way we're all complaining it's not on TV anymore or whatever. Like I think that could be an option to make it.
Yeah. No, but I think you covered it really well, and I think that's really it's working out how you filter that. Who is the top 30? Who is the top 5 women? You know,
yeah, it's hard.
Are those? But there probably is a way. There probably is.
Like the World Surf, it's not that World difficult. Surf Tour, you know, it's so hard to get into that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So let's just make,
yeah.
I don't know, make it harder to get in there. Yeah. But
and your point earlier on was that you've got to be able to be realistic about your progression.
Yeah.
And then use the reality of your progression.
My goal is
going
to be, let's see if I can get into the World Cup.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, it doesn't really stop any progression. No. It just means it's another step.
I think the one thing we don't have with this is the problem is that definitely like the national series in our country, in New Zealand, in Australia, is probably not good enough it's not good enough to sieve out those elites.
Yeah.
But you know, it's hard. I don't know what to do. That's just, you know, I'm just chucking stuff out there, but
that's interesting.
It's interesting what Tani said, but
fortunately, I'm not going to ask you to solve it, but I think you got a long way to it.
Thankfully.
I definitely do. Definitely
not
do.
Not without trying to upset anyone. I wish I will.
Unfortunately, I think I could probably talk to you all night.
Let's do it.
I've got one last question.
Yeah, I think we've got to wrap it up soon.
One last question. Was the Honda bike any good?
Was the Honda bike any good?
Can I answer it first as a spectator?
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
I actually got on your bike once, let you know, and you left it somewhere, and I jumped on it and rode it down. It was like a little bit of a trail and parked back up, and I was like...
Did you?
Yeah, it's not as good as I thought.
No. Well, I don't know. I think when you were probably on the same program as me, where it's like, it's going to be a magic carpet.
Yeah.
It's going to be a magic carpet, which we all think. We were like... I'm gonna get the new Fox 40. That's gonna be a magic carpet. I'm gonna go full 29er. Oh, I'm gonna be able to fly down the hill now. We're all on this same program, but it's never as big a jump as you think. Yes, it was good. The rear shock was phenomenal, way ahead of its time. Still would be good nowadays.
Wow.
The fork, really good, bit flexy. Not
that was
travel.
What you said earlier on.
Not
enough travel.
Old upside down forks were flexy anyway.
Yeah, not enough travel. Bike wasn't crazy light. It was about 38 pounds or something.
Mm.
It didn't roll as fast as a conventional bike because it obviously had drag. There was a lot of drag in there, so they said it was, you know, like 5 or 10% more drag than a normal bike.
Why would Honda put a bike out with drag?
Well, because that makes no sense. They felt that their gearbox system was worth that detriment in rolling.
Mm. And your opinion is?
Well, I can't really talk, but Greg Millar won a World Cup on it. Won a World Cup overall on it.
So it took Greg Minnar to make that thing win.
Yeah, exactly. I don't even know if I podiumed on it once.
Yeah. I tell you what, it looked fabulous.
Yeah,
it looks very one on one.
We could, that could be a default win, but.
Wow.
I'll take it. That was a funny weekend, actually, because Martin Whiteley was our manager at the time. Yeah. He was like, Greg, you're fighting for points. You go and. Try to get points, go as fast as you can in qualifying.
Yeah.
Matty, can you wait for 10 seconds on the side of the track and play the weather game? And I think with me, he was just sort of like, just go do whatever you want, you're going to do it anyway. Just fly down the hill.
Wait, what does that mean? Wait 10 seconds on the track?
Well, because Matty had a fast run.
Yeah.
Stopped at the side of the track, waited for 10 seconds, then got back on the track. No, he stayed on the track, but then got to the bottom. So
essentially, so he guaranteed an early
so
he's
guaranteed
run.
To qualify, but down the pack. It's a rain game.
Wow.
So wow. Martin Whiteley, like, so Matty would go down an hour or 2 hours earlier than Greg.
Yep.
Then whoever qualified first. And Martin Whiteley, rightly so, he didn't do anything illegal. Weather came in at 3 o'clock every day.
Although the rules changed.
The rule has changed now because of this. Yeah. That's why you get protected riders. That's why you, yeah. whatever. So, and you can't, these days, you can't really pull over because if you pull over for 2 seconds, you might not be in the top 60 and then you're not going to qualify.
Yeah, it's changed somewhat.
But yeah, then Matty came down and put a steam of a run in and won the World Cup.
And sat there all day, just yeah. keep clocking it.
Yeah.
That makes me wonder, like, someone like Martin Whiteley, you've had experiences like your manager and team manager. I mean, there's not many like individuals out there like him who can like kind of orchestrate a great team result over a full season and almost guarantee it.
Yeah.
If he's going to run a team, it's almost guaranteed to do pretty well.
Yeah, I think if you get Greg on your team, you're pretty much guaranteed, aren't you? Back then you were, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
No, you're right, he's put some great teams together, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and what's he doing this year, Neil? Help me.
I don't know, because I guess he's still YT. Really. Yeah. I'm not sure.
That seemed to have gone very quiet.
It's your Angel Sparrow.
Very quiet. Yeah. I hope Angel absolutely shows the world what he's actually capable of this year. Go on, dude, do it. That'd be great. Right, on that, I'm going to open up the floor to questions just in case I miss an opportunity. Jack?
Going back to what you said about Niall winning on that Honda, do you reckon it's the rider that makes a difference? Obviously, do you reckon it's the rider that wins or the bike helps? Do you reckon if someone...
If I say a percentage of like rider to bike, great question. Don?
It's 95% rider, if not more, I would say.
So
do you reckon Pyrion would have won 3 races in the overall if he wasn't on that?
Good question, Jack. He's put you on the point there.
Well, it depends. There aren't many bad bikes now.
Yeah.
I mean, you've raced oranges. You've raced...
No. Leicester Noble, one of my favourite people.
It's a joke.
No.
joking.
If you say something bad about a Cannondale in a minute, I'll slap both of you.
I mean, my downhill bike last year was £41. So, yeah. 32 now.
So go on, ask your question.
I'm gonna not fully agree and say it's 95% rider, but I'll probably say 85-90. So you think that you put, but not just bike, we're talking tyres and brakes and setup.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
I mean, you can have a great bike, you get your tyres wrong, it's over.
For sure.
Yeah, for sure. So you've got to get that right. And that comes down to the experience of the rider. At the end of the day, the rider's the guy who says, that agrees with the mechanic, like, yes, that is the tyre.
Yeah.
It always comes down to you guys, doesn't it, going, I think I know what to do.
Yeah, and it comes to experience.
And that's great. Well, dude, I can't wait to see you racing again this year. I still think you're one World Cup away.
Yes.
I mean, it's quite the goal. It's quite the prize to be the greatest mountain biker on the planet.
Brandon
Semenek cannot win World Cups. He's very, very good.
Actually, yeah, and Samuel can't do backflips. So.
can win an enduro one.
Yeah, he can.
He can win. Yeah, there's. I mean, I'm not saying there's not more to do, but I hold out hope. There's a huge season ahead. You're on a bike you love. I cannot wait to see you racing.
Thank you very much.
You've got a bad shoulder at the moment, which is a shame. You're missing Fort William World Cup, but.
I think is a good one to miss.
Yes, but going on the weather, you're not missing out on much. No. Like you say, it's not your favourite track, so hey.
No.
I'm sure it's going to be a huge year in terms of race results and definitely in terms of video content.
Yeah, yeah. Keep your eyes peeled.
I've
cool
had
stuff.
A sneak preview and it looks insane. So do not miss out on what Brendan's got coming this year. Thank you so much for doing the podcast. It's brilliant.
Thank
Fantastic.
You.
Fantastic.
Cheers, Dom.
Neil,
cheers.
Absolute professor, nailing it. And yeah, thank
Absolute
you for
professor
watching.
Professor on his MacBook Pro.
Yeah, thank Googles. You for watching yeah. the Mountain Bike Podcast. You can catch it on, of course, on YouTube, but of course we're on all of the very popular podcast apps that slipped my mind.
Apple. Spotify.
Apparently, go on iTunes, we're there. And of course, you can also catch all of our GMBN content on YouTube on our channel. So, yeah, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Superstar, Brendan, thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you.
Great stuff, guys. Cheers, dude.
All good.
Brilliant.
Nice one.
I've just noticed your thumbs.